It's time for a look back on today's match. This is the Full Time Report with the voices of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore.
Atlanta United Soccer is brought to you by Equifax, The Home Depot, Mercedes-Benz, AT&T, Publix, Scana, Cuff & Tire, Lunazol, La Perea, Piedmont Healthcare, Heineken, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, and Associate Credit Union.
The home for MLS in Atlanta, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Atlanta United jumped out to a 1-0 lead. It looked like maybe even a 2-0 lead before Joseph Martinez's apparent goal was waved off on VAR. And then the New York Red Bulls pounced, scoring three goals, one from the spot late in the first half, and then two very early in the second half from Bradley Wright Phillips. And it's the Red Bulls collecting a 3-1 win here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium tonight. The second time in as many matches consecutively that Atlanta United has lost at home. There was a lot of controversy. I know many of you are just getting to your cars now. We will try to dig into some of the debatable decisions tonight, namely the Martinez goal that was waved off and the penalty on Miles Robinson that produced a penalty kick. But the bottom line is, after the Martinez goal was disallowed, somehow the New York Red Bulls were able to gain an edge. And the number that really stands out to us, we were talking about it during the break, just as a demonstration of how out of joint Atlanta United was tonight, their passing accuracy on the game, 71.4%. That's by far a season low. For perspective, Atlanta United on the season passing at well over 80%. They were as high as 92% in their win over Vancouver. That's a very alarming number.
Coming into the match, Atlanta United was completing passes at an 82.7% clip, good for fifth in Major League Soccer. But then you look at the Red Bulls and their defense, and they lead the league with the lowest pass percentage completed against them coming into tonight, 69.2. Atlanta actually beat that by just a little bit. But that dramatic difference, 10 percentage points in your passing completion, and this is the type of match you get. You had some bad giveaways in the defensive half. When you look at Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, who's one of your better passers in this team, and he 34 passes completed at 61.8%. Jeff Larinowicz with some uncharacteristic giveaways. And it was very difficult for Atlanta United to play the type of match that they normally play. And they were very stubborn in trying to continue to play that type of match and build out of the back. And eventually the Red Bulls wore them down and caused the turnovers they needed.
The other big headline, Leandro Gonzalez-Pires getting his fifth yellow card in the 65th minute. He is suspended for the New England match. Greg Garza red carded in the 71st minute. For the moment, he is suspended for the next match. That one could be interesting. I would not be shocked if that were appealed, and we can get into that later. But Garza, based on the replays we saw, we think he was sent off for going studs up, but his boot rolled off the ball, causing his studs to kind of flip up, and then he hit his man. I would be curious to see if maybe Atlanta United would try to appeal that red card.
I don't think you're going to get that one back, even though, you know, we've only seen the replay from behind it, and the boot goes off the ball and then up pretty high on the New York player, studs up into, you know, his inside of his knee, maybe even the inner thigh. Garza with a poor touch put himself in that situation, kind of launched himself at the ball. He went studs up at the ball, which is always putting yourself into that possibility of getting a red. The bigger concern for me was Greg Garza came off injured out of
right.
that challenge as well.
Right.
So you have a question there. You have Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, who picked up a yellow, his fifth of the season, which was a very close call that could have possibly been a red on him as well for being the last man back, denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. I don't think it was, but it was borderline. The yellow, the referees did not go to look at the replay on that one, and that's going to be the story coming out of it. It's just the usage of the video assistant referee, Mark Geiger, tonight. You're supposed to go to him on clear and obvious errors that he sees something and he tells the referee crew about it, and it really was not clear all night what clear and obvious meant.
Yeah. In fact, the TV announcers, JP Della Camera and Tony Miola on FS1 seemed to think that the Joseph Martinez goal should not have been a goal. They felt as though Martinez tripped the defender. I think that's very debatable, and when you go home and see the replay, you'll see why. But Miola also, I think, correctly said, you can't go to VAR on that. That's not clear and obvious.
This is my problem with the system as it's currently constructed. I will say it again, as I've said since this whole system came into the league. I think video assistant referee going to replay, using it, is a good thing for the game, and it will make the game better. Not when it's used like this, because it is not there to judge judgment calls for a second time. That's not the intent of the video assistant referee. VAR is supposed to be used in clear and obvious mistakes. A referee didn't have information and didn't have everything to make the right call. In the two situations that we've seen in the last two matches here at home, video assistant referee and the replay system was used to correct a judgment call according to what was called on the field. That is not what it is supposed to be used for. That's my problem with it. Forget what the call was on the field, what it wasn't on the field, what it ended up being. It should not be used like that. It was never intended to be used like that. It just is an abuse of the system in my mind.
And this is not us as Atlanta United announcers griping. We're talking about the way the law is written. The law says VAR is to be used only in the case of a clear and obvious error by the referee.
Not a judgment call.
Correct.
That's the problem that I have with it. And I mean, I don't like the call on the Martinez one because, again, it's just like the play against Kansas City where a call is made on a judgment call on the field, and that's being overturned. It's not a clear and obvious error when it's a judgment call. So the problem beyond that tonight was that is where Atlanta United kind of lost their way tonight. They never rebounded mentally from that, combined with the penalty called on Miles Robinson against Bradley Wright Phillips. Everything kind of fell apart there, and that's when the mistakes were amplified.
Just a quick look at the statistics. Shots were 14-12 in favor of the Red Bulls. Shots on target were 7-6 in favor of Atlanta United. The five stripes with five corners, New York Red Bulls with four. Red Bulls had 15 fouls, Atlanta United with 14. Crosses were 12-8 in favor of New York Red Bulls. Possession, 51-49, New York Red Bulls. The passing accuracy number, very alarming for Atlanta United again. They passed at just 71.4% on the match, by far a season low. And the Red Bulls, one of the worst, in fact, the worst passing team statistically in MLS coming into tonight, passed at 74%, which is very, very good for them. Duels won 64-58 in favor of the Red Bulls. We'll take a timeout. Keep sending us your questions and your comments at Longshoe at ATL Soccer 929 and at Mike Conti 929. We'll get to those a little later. When we come back, we'll have the man of the match, the highlights, and the scoring summary. 3-1 New York Red Bulls over Atlanta United. The full-time report continues after this on Sports Radio 929 The Game.
A complete recap of today's game, this is the Full-Time Report.
Here's the voices of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore on Sports Radio 929 The Game.
Atlanta United taking a 3-1 loss tonight here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Almost incredibly now, they have lost back-to-back games here at the Benz, and kind of the double jeopardy is that Leandro Gonzalez-Perez and Greg Garza will both be suspended for the next match a week from Wednesday in New England. We have a lot to get to in this segment. I do want to begin with the situation with Kamar Lawrence, the Red Bulls player that went down on a very unusual, unclear, but nonetheless scary injury late in the second half. I know that many of you here at the stadium did not see a replay because it was not shown. We don't know what his status is at the moment. I am assuming they took him to hospital, but I don't know that for sure. We had a report from the pitch that he may have taken a blow to the chin with the ball striking his chin. But it's unclear. The replays that FS1 provided did not show close in enough exactly what happened to him.
Yeah, it was really difficult to tell. It looked like he was originally going to head the ball away. His feet started going out from under him. Thought maybe he could chest it away, and it's unclear where the ball made contact with him. I don't think his head hit the ground, but it was a very odd situation. Ryan Mira, the goalkeeper, immediately waving trainers on, he could see everything that was building up. I don't think Penzo had an idea of how serious it was, or he would have stopped play immediately. It's a very awkward situation, and we'll be waiting to see what comes out of that.
Yeah, I mean, and Darren Eales even tweeted it. It's just thoughts and prayers right now for Kamara Lawrence. We hope he's okay. They did put him on a backboard with his neck immobilized. They then put him on a stretcher and carted him off the pitch directly into a tunnel, and I would assume into an ambulance. If we get an official update, we will pass it along to you. That's all we know right now. We don't have anything official. The man of the match brought to you by Heineken. We had a long discussion during the commercial break about whom was the man of the match for Atlanta United tonight. I know TV gave it to Almiron, heavy workload for him again tonight. Here at the stadium, they gave it to Barco. He scored in the 26th minute. We will go with Barco as well.
Yeah, Barco was dangerous in the attack most of the night. Had to come off after the red card because you have to get reorganized, and you wanted the speed of Almiron on the counterattacks. But I thought Barco was good in his passing. I thought he created chances. He was earning free kicks. I was really impressed with his work, and he gets the goal. It was a nice give-and-go with Almiron. He continued his run. Almiron's shot is blocked, falls into his path, and he converts the chance.
So Ezequiel Barco, our man of the match, brought to you by Heineken, scored his third goal of the season tonight. He has three goals in his last four matches, and that was the hot play of the game, brought to you by Scan as we go through the scoring summary coming in the 26th minute, and we have to hold our breath. Because, you know, VAR is applied very unusually these days, but it did count, and Barco gave Atlanta United the 1-0 lead. Here's Barco, middle attacking third, Ezequiel Barco to Almiron at the top of the arc. His shot deflects. Barco is there, shoots, score! Broken play goal, Ezequiel Barco's third goal of the season, and the goal did come. Atlanta United's got a 1-0 lead. Then, about 8 minutes later, it appeared as though Atlanta United took a 2-0 lead. Julian Gressel sending it into the middle for Joseph Martinez, who's onside, makes his man fall. Martinez dribbling in, shoots, score! They're going to go to VAR. So Mark Geiger, the VAR, wants Penso to take a look at this.
He looked at it very quick.
Looked at the monitor very quickly, and now Penso will come back onto the playing surface, make the VAR signal. No goal. All right, we've debated whether or not it was the correct call. I'm sure that debate will persist into tomorrow. I do want to give Chris Penzo credit for one thing. Bear with me here. For the first time, I think, all year, we've had VAR a lot in these first 12 matches of the year. For the first time, we had a clear signal by the referee of no goal. Didn't point for goal kick, didn't point for a free kick or anything like that. He made the washout signal. Pro, if you are listening, I don't know if we're still on Sirius XM or not, let's make that a standard. If you're going to wave a goal off, make the washout signal. It's like incomplete pass in football. It will make everything a lot easier to understand for the fans and the announcers. I do appreciate that. But after the goal was waved off, it all fell apart for Atlanta United. 10 minutes after that, Miles Robinson commits a foul in the penalty area, and a penalty kick is awarded to the Red Bulls. It is taken by Daniel Royer. Royer against Guzan. Royer waiting for the signal from Penso. Gets it, strides up to the ball, strikes it, and scores. And we are even at one in the 42nd minute. So Atlanta United very nearly up 2-0 in the first half, really dominating the first half. Somehow they go into the clubhouse with a 1-1 tie, and then early in the second half, two goals in quick succession by Bradley Wright Phillips. The first, this one coming in the 51st minute. Kaku now sending it ahead to Murillo in the near corner. He'll play it across. PWP heads it in. What a goal! Golazo for the Red Bulls, and they've got a 2-1 lead. And then 4 minutes later, BWP again with the dagger. Coming back the other way, the Red Bulls. Here's a shot and another goal by Bradley Wright Phillips. Off the crossbar and in, and the Red Bulls have taken command here in the 55th minute. Life kind of comes at you fast. We thought Joseph Martinez had his 9th goal of the year, which would have led MLS. Instead, he's still at 8. Bradley Wright Phillips gets to his 8th goal of the year, and now we have a 3-way tie for the Golden Boot. Jozy Szardes of Columbus Crew also in there. And then Greg Garza red carded about 16 minutes later. That snuffed out any last hope for Atlanta United, and they end up losing 3-1.
They did still create some chances going down to 10. It was just so much more difficult. The press that the New York Red Bulls, you know, employed tonight was even more effective against 10, and it just made it really difficult for Atlanta United to connect passes. The Red Bulls are a team that have a true identity in this league. They know exactly how they're going to play. They know exactly where people are going to be on the field. They're very organized. Give Jesse Marsh a ton of credit for the way this team plays. It's incredibly difficult to play against. And you see it tonight when you do lose that sharpness. And after the Martinez goal, Atlanta United lost that sharpness completely. When you lose it against a Red Bulls team, they are going to punish you for it.
And they did.
Bradley Wright Phillips is the MVP of the league right now. And yep. You see it on these chances. Yep. He is lethal in front of goal. He's dropping into midfield to help out as well. I'm so impressed with Bradley Wright Phillips and where he is in his career right now.
And Kaku in his first year in MLS, mm-hmm. his eighth assist now, that's going to put him among the league leaders, if not the league lead. We'll have to check the updated table tomorrow. But Kaku, 23-year-old, coming over from Argentina, and he's really injected something for the Red Bulls too. It's amazing how we've seen Toronto scuffle after bowing out of the CONCACAF Champions League. They may have finally gotten their sea legs, but it took them a long time. Red Bulls got knocked out of CONCACAF Champions League. They've played great the last month.
Well, they haven't had the injuries Toronto's had too, and I think Toronto's finally starting to get healthy. But the Red Bulls, this group, you know, they have that club identity, and it's something Atlanta United's really striving for. When you have players come through the academy, come through the USL club, come through the MLS club, they know exactly how to play. And when you have a style and you have a system, that's so important. That's what Atlanta United is working towards. That's why they launched ATLU TD2. That's why you see guys getting time there. It's a process. And Jesse Marsh has done a great job with the opportunities that he's had, you know, since taking this team over in 2015. They haven't gotten over the hurdle of winning a trophy just yet. They've been close, but they haven't won MLS Cup. They haven't won the Open Cup. That's what they're trying to get to this year, and I feel like if they can keep playing this way, they're going to be a handful for everybody.
Four of the players out there on the pitch for them tonight were homegrowns. Mm-hmm. So that speaks to your point about coming up through the club, and now they're only 4 points out of first in the East all of a sudden after a very, very slow start. Atlanta United wants to remind you that for each Atlanta United clean sheet this season, they'll donate $2,000 to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. This year's donation total currently $6,000. $1,000. One more call for questions and comments at Longshoe, at Mike Conti 929, and at ATL Soccer 929. We'll get to all of that right after this on the full-time report. 3-1 Atlanta United falling to New York Red Bulls on Sports Radio 929 The Game.
And out.
A complete recap of today's game, this is the full-time report.
Here's the voices of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore on Sports Radio 929 The Game.
Back at the Benz, where Atlanta United is sent to a 3-1 defeat this evening by the New York Red Bulls. The match going haywire after an apparent Joseph Martinez goal disallowed by the VAR in the 32nd minute. From there, Red Bulls got a penalty, which the more and more we look at it, the more and more we wonder why. And then after converting the penalty kick, Royer, Bradley Wright Phillips with two goals early in the second half. And remember, both goals came after Jeff Lorenowitz was red carded. We don't really know why. And after they went to VAR on that, they rescinded it down to a yellow. But that's another moment in the match that I think may have been a little bit bigger than we realized, because just having that disruption where you think you're going to go down to 10 men and have to play 45 minutes down a man. Right after that, Bradley Wright Phillips scored twice.
That's three disruptions. That's the problem here. And hey, first off, let's say this. Atlanta United has to be able to handle those things better. You have to be able to play the match as it presents itself. Atlanta United struggled really from the goal being called back. They really struggled after that point. They couldn't get back into their flow. But you look back at all of this, and we've seen a slow-motion replay that people feel like vindicates the play being called back. A foul on Martinez is what was ended up being called. When you watch it back, I'll go back to what I said watching it live. Tim Parker is scrambling to get there. He's cutting across Joseph Martinez with his body. He steps on Martinez's foot, and Martinez jumps up as his foot is stepped on and makes contact with Parker. As Parker's initiating the contact to begin with, even without the step on the foot, to me, Tim Parker initiated the contact. Joseph Martinez has nowhere to go in that situation. He tried to hold up as Parker was cutting across him. I don't feel like that's a foul in any other day. So that happens. Then you get the penalty, which I think was an atrocious call. Bradley Wright Phillips made the most of it. That's what he does. That's what he's supposed to do. He's in the box. He's supposed to go down and get that call if he can. He did. But when you're with Atlanta United on the bench or on the field at that point, you feel like you were wronged on one end of the field. You feel like you're wronged on the other end. You get halftime to try to regroup and rebuild, and you come out. Then you get the Larenowitz call right after halftime. They really could not bounce back mentally. They have to be stronger because these things will happen. You have to be able to deal with it. It's not an excuse for giving up those two goals, but it does take you out of your game, and that's what's frustrating about it. And we've seen lots of comments, and we're going to get into some on Twitter now, you know, that the referees have to get better in this league, and that's something referees across American soccer have to get better. The level of play, the speed of play, more importantly, has improved dramatically in the last 10 years. The level of refereeing does have to get better.
Well, the problem is VAR is supposed to be the fail-safe, right?
And it's making it more complicated.
Exactly, because now the situations on which you go to VAR are becoming less and less clear. And what I get concerned about, Jason, is you're going to have a situation like you have in the National Hockey League where every single time a goal is scored, you can't really celebrate because there's still that iffiness as to whether or not they're going to go to VAR. The Barco goal being a very good example.
Mm-hmm.
That was a broken play goal. A couple things looked funny there. They did not go to VAR, but I think we had that fear that they would.
I did.
You know? And then the Martinez goal, which appeared to be a good goal, they go straight to VAR. You don't want to get into the situation like you have in the National Hockey.
Right.
I think it has killed professional hockey, where every single goal is looked at for something that may have even happened 30 seconds before the goal is scored. Did the puck just go outside the blue line or not, for example, on an offside? So they've got to get that cleaned up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that comes from FIFA prior to the World Cup.
No.
I don't know if it's something that has to be dealt with more on the MLS level. But, again, the way the law states, it is only to be used for clear and obvious errors by the referee.
There are other leagues implementing video assistant referee around the world right now, and there haven't been as many issues in other leagues, at least that I've been hearing about as we've seen here lately. I have a very bad feeling that you're going to have a very controversial situation in the World Cup this summer with video assistant referee because it's new. And, you know, we've seen it, and, I mean, we're on edge about the Barco goal expecting to have that called back. I didn't even want to say anything about it because I figured that was coming back based off our previous experiences. The rest of the world is not used to this. And you get a situation with video assistant referee at the World Cup in a knockout match, then you might see some changes to the process.
What was it in 2010? Was it trying to remember.
You thinking the Frank Lampard goal against Germany?
Well, they should have had goal line technology
right for
that. I'm talking about the U.S. national team, their second match. Was it Algeria or was it Slovenia?
Slovenia.
Where the referee from Mali messed something up. It ended up as a draw, but it should have been a win. Now, if you have VAR there, that would clean that up in theory.
In theory.
In theory. But you're right. You make a very good point. And goal line technology was used almost flawlessly in 2014.
That's easy.
So, but that's cut and dry. Was the ball across the line or not? With VAR, just like in the NFL, you don't use video review on judgment calls.
No, you can't. And that's the problem is now it's being used on judgment calls. Foul, no foul on the Martinez one. The referee's right there. The referee sees it live. You're not supposed to use video assistant referee to say, hey, you saw that, but you didn't see it correctly.
Let me ask you this. Is a potential fix, and we're going to get to your Twitter comments in a second. The way the law is written, there are four situations where they can go to VAR. Was there a red card? Was there mistaken identity? And then, you know, there's goals.
Mm-hmm.
Should VAR be cleaned up to change when they can go to it on a goal to determine only if the ball was across the goal line or not? In other words, take out the judgment element like we saw last Wednesday, like we saw tonight, and only apply VAR as far as the quote-unquote goal line technology is used in the World Cup.
They have to figure something out because clear and obvious should not mean judgment. That's the problem I have with it, is clear and obvious should mean you don't see something, or the AR messed up and the center referee didn't know that. The AR doesn't see it. That's where it should be. It shouldn't be giving the ref another look at a play that he ruled one way on the field in live action. That's the problem I have with it.
In Orlando, last Sunday, Garza taken down by the throat in the penalty area, back to goal early in the match. They call the penalty. They don't go to VAR. Mm-hmm. Why not? It's a judgment call.
Right.
And there was no clear and obvious error by the referee. It's something that I'm sure you guys will discuss on your podcast this week. I'm sure and you and I will get into it. Well, Jimmy's out this week, but you and I will get into it on Stoppage Time this week. Jared and Craig, I'm sure, on Off the Woodwork, they'll get into it too. It gives us something to talk about. It's a little bit of a shame that there is no match this coming weekend, because, quite frankly, all that talk about Law 11, the offside law, after last Wednesday got a little bit tiresome to me. I don't want to have to talk about this for 10 days, but we will if we have to. Let's get to your Twitter questions now. Thank you for indulging us in our discussion about VAR and the laws of the game. I think this is a huge, huge question, and it's asked by a couple people. This is Joshua Eisenberg. Garza's out. LGP is out. McCann is still injured. What does the back line look like now?
It's not clear if McCann and Escobar will be back for the New England match. The expectation that Tata Martino told the media this week was that they would be available for that. I think you go to 4-2-3-1, though. I think you get Tito Villalba back on the field. I've really liked what I've seen from him in his appearances against Kansas City, against Orlando, and tonight. I think he's got that speed back. He's got that explosiveness back. You want to get that attacking quartet together up top. So on the left side, Mikey Ambrose. Mikey Ambrose played very, very well for ATL UTD2 in midweek. He's a guy you can count on in that role. We've seen him before. He does not have a major drop-off in performance. Another player to consider is Jose Hernandez, who's back now playing with ATL UTD2. He played about 30 minutes on Wednesday, played 45 last night in Louisville. He's one to consider, but I think Ambrose would be the leading possibility there. And in the center, you know, you're going to go with either Parkhurst and Miles Robinson, or Chris McCann, or Franco Escobar if they're healthy.
And I believe that Escobar was running this week. Am I remembering that correctly?
Maybe I think both have had some activity.
Yeah, so they're on the way back.
Yeah.
We don't want to speculate exactly. And remember, Atlanta United probably will take several days off now. They do not play this week. They probably won't resume training until, I would suspect, Thursday at the earliest. It might even be later than that. At Dennis Murray, questions on officiating aside, what made Atlanta United successful in other matches was missing. Gressel on the wing wasn't there, he says. Chances on goal they had were less on build of play than single attacker.
So much of that's down to the way the Red Bulls play. And I think you have to, you know, I would caution fans from digging too deep and trying to find a lot of meaning in the way this match played out because of the way the Red Bulls play. It's so disruptive, and it was so effective tonight. You know, you weren't creating a lot of chances from the wing because you couldn't find the wing, because the way the Red Bulls play, they press you and they're very good at it. What was a little frustrating was Atlanta United didn't adjust to the press. I expected them to do one of two things after you saw kind of how effective it was going to be. You either, if you can't play through the press and after everything started to kind of go against you, you weren't playing through the press. You have to play more direct at that point, and by the time you fell behind, you couldn't take this option. You have to sit back and concede possession and play, just give the ball away, essentially, and make the Red Bulls attack you, make them come out. Once you fall behind, you can't do that. They couldn't go more direct. They just decided against it. They tried to play through it, and everything just kind of fell apart. That's what was frustrating about it from an Atlanta United perspective. But, again, you look at the decisions that went against them, I think they had a hard time bouncing back from it, and we're starting to hear it from some of the comments that are coming from the media right now.
Yeah.
It's a lot of frustration in that Atlanta United locker room right now with the way this match was called.
Let's bring in Gustavo. Always enjoy his feedback. Always level-headed.
Yes.
That's what I like about Gustavo, even when he's two or three bottles of Tempranillo into the night.
Ooh.
He said he mentioned that, by the way, in pregame.
he might be tonight.
He says, balanced match, misleading result. Officials judged by last match. not current, heard from Marsh that Atlanta United is a dirty team. I don't know if that's in reference to something said tonight.
Last
obviously,
year.
It was said last year. I don't know if it was restated tonight.
No.
Says Martinez goal, legal but immoral. Five Stripes lost their shooting accuracy and winning chances. New York Red Bulls didn't forgive and took advantage. VAR was their 12th player.
Yeah, the thing from last year about Jesse Marsh saying that Atlanta United, the bench and the coaching staff were instructing players to kick the opposition. It was the Red Bulls who were very physical on Miguel Almiron, and he was incredibly frustrated about it. You saw some very hard challenges on him. The Connor Lade tackle at the end reminded me of the tackle on Tito Villalba against Minnesota last year, where it was very high across the knees. It's a very dangerous one. He saw a yellow for that tonight. The tackle earlier in the match from Tyler Adams on Miguel Almiron on the sideline, another one. Very difficult, and that's when you get into all of the calls in a totality. It's just very difficult. In general, you know, the Red Bulls took Atlanta out of their match, and the referee calls kind of helped with that, but New York rode the momentum of the match to a result. Atlanta never really found their way back into it. They tried. They kept playing. You know, I was impressed with 10 men where you were still creating a few chances, but you were just outnumbered. Villalba looked good when he came on. The speed was definitely a challenge for the Red Bulls' backline. Almiron kind of struggling to make something happen at the end. Martinez was working hard, but Martinez going up against those two center backs, and especially when they're allowed to play that physically, it's really tough for Martinez to create much when his back is to goal and he's being, you know, pummeled it sometimes by a guy who's about 5 inches taller.
Yeah. One more from David. It's a question about the Garza red card, and this is something we talked about when we saw it live. He says, maybe I'm being a homer, but it looked like Garza got the ball and his foot rolled up the ball, which put his spikes up and directly into his knee. That may not matter. I don't know. Does it matter?
No, it's tricky. I mean, I feel like it's kind of unlucky for Garza is the best way to put it. Anytime you go in studs up, you bring a red card into play. That's just the facts of it. And in that case, yes, Garza did get to the ball first, but you went studs up into the ball, and you never know where your foot's going to go at that point. In this case, it goes over the ball. I don't think he was intending to go that high. I think his foot was trying to keep it low. It's just you go in studs up. And the way you bounce off the ball and go into it, it's a red. You know, it's a tough red. It's an unlucky red, but it's a red.
I'm more worried about the Garza injury, by the way.
Exactly. That's what I'm more worried about at this point. But Jose Hernandez getting back does help you, gives you a little more cover. Mikey Ambrose has been playing very well. Mikey Ambrose with two beautiful free kicks for ATL UTD2 on Wednesday. And, you know, it's easy to get distracted by that. I thought he played really, really well and kind of was a leader on that back line with a young team around him. So Mikey Ambrose stepping in doesn't concern me. You want Greg Garza back as soon as possible, though, because we've seen in these last couple of weeks how important he is to this team.
Well, everything is better when Atlanta United wins. To date, a total of $8,000 has been donated to Piedmont Healthcare as a not-for-profit hospital system. Piedmont Healthcare relies on the generosity of donors to expand healthcare services in our community. Atlanta United is proud to be a Piedmont donor. Well, only one team in MLS will not play over Memorial Day weekend. That will be the Five Stripes. Their next match a week from Wednesday in New England against the Revolution. We'll look ahead to that one right after this. They lose tonight 3-1 to New York Red Bulls. Here are the full-time report on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
A complete recap of today's game, this is the Full-Time Report.
Here's the voices of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Some final thoughts here from the Benz after a 3-1 Atlanta United loss to New York Red Bulls tonight. Atlanta United, again, think it bears repeating, still atop the Supporters Shield table, but they do not play this weekend. Everyone else in MLS does. So, New York City, Columbus Crew, Sporting Kansas City, they could all jump over Atlanta United just by virtue of the fact that the Five Stripes are not playing this weekend, but then right back to work a week from Wednesday in New England. And the Revolution are kind of a weird team. They got off to a surprisingly good start, but their recent form, they lost 1-0 to Columbus last night. That's not a terrible result. They got a 3-2 win over Toronto. That's a great result a week ago. But then 2 weeks ago, they lost to Montreal Impact 4-2. I still don't know what they're all about.
Oh, Montreal's, I think, even more confusing. Sometimes they look really good, like one of the better teams in the East, and sometimes they look the exact opposite. So New England, they're a team that presses. They're a team that makes the match very chaotic. They're very athletic. They're able to do that. They did that against Toronto to great effect. They did that against NYC in a 2-2 draw earlier this year to great effect. But Columbus showed some ways that you can handle that press and some things that I think Atlanta United will learn from in the way Columbus weathered the Revolution last night. But Atlanta United had a crash course tonight in a team that presses, and they're going to have to learn things from this match because we've seen teams try to bunker against Atlanta United this season, and it hasn't worked as well as it did last year, not with Nagby and Barco in the squad. But now you see that teams can actually cause some problems when they press very high and very aggressively. Chicago did some elements of that. They didn't have the athleticism that New York does. They caused some problems for Atlanta. New York caused a ton of problems for Atlanta United tonight. That's what Tata Martino is going to have to take to the training ground to work on this week.
Still a long way to go in the season, folks. Still two-thirds of the season, a little less than two-thirds of the season remaining, and Atlanta United still atop the Supporters Shield table. This is not the end of the world, but they're going to have some things to be concerned about with two very key players, Greg Garza and Leandro Gonzalez-Perez, both out for New England. And remember now, Almiron is on the yellow card tightrope. That's very concerning because he would be suspended on his next yellow card. Hopefully that does not come in any of the next five matches. If it doesn't, then he'll get some relief on that. We'll be on the air a week from Wednesday for Five Stripes Countdown, 7 p.m. live from Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Kickoff 7:30 a week from Wednesday. Atlanta United and New York Revolution. Next week will be a very busy week for the Five Stripes. They play on Wednesday, and then they will turn around and come back home and play Saturday against Philadelphia Union, and then some very big matches looming later in June against New York City, Portland Timbers, Orlando City again, this time at the Benz. So things are not going to get much easier for the Five Stripes, and it will all start a week from Wednesday. Tonight's broadcast produced by Jimmy Vance, engineered by Miller Pope here in the broadcast booth, Oren Romaine back in our Midtown Atlanta studios. For Jason Longshore, I'm Mike Conti. The final score once more, New York Red Bulls with a 3-1 win over Atlanta United. We'll see you next week on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.